if you ask me where I come from, here's what I tell everyone. I was born by God's dear grace in an extraordinary place, where the stars and stripes and the eagle fly. It's a big old land with countless dreams, and happiness ain't out of reach. Hard work pays off the way it should. Yeah, I've seen enough to know that we've got it good. Where the stars and stripes and the eagle fly. There's a lady that stands in a harbor for what we believe. And there's a bell that still echoes the price that it costs to be free. And if that bothers you, well, that's too bad. But if you've got pride and you're proud to do, hey, we could use some more like me and you. Where the stars and the stripes and the eagle fly. That I prefer to love my wife and raise my kids, hey, the same way that my daddy did. With stars and stripes and the eagle fly.
Betty Lou, she was the one, a combination AK-57 Uzi Raider laser triple barrel double scoped heat-seeking shotgun.
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and welcome to The Shooting Bench, the most radical, right-wing, conservative, no-holds-barred, information-packed, freedom-loving firearms information program on talk radio, beginning right now.
All right, fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
All right, here we are with our new schedule. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. August the 1st, Monday, worked out perfectly. And we've got our new schedule starting tonight. When we screw up like we did this weekend, we'll be live, or Amy will be live anyway. I'll be live from time to time. But we will always have a fresh new pre-record on for you for Amy. I'll bounce back and forth. Sometimes it'll be live, but it'll always be new and fresh. It won't be an old archive unless something comes up that doesn't allow us to get in here in time or something like that. And it frequently does, so I'll just apologize in advance right now for those times when it does. But our new schedule, 2 hours for the shooting bench, 2 hours Monday, 2 hours Wednesday, second hour being all gun talk, and 3 hours on Friday. We're going to try this and see how it works. That's going to be, of course, I did 2 hours every night for several years, so we ought to be able to make this work. We'll do the best we can anyway. So, Radio Doc, thank you, buddy. I appreciate that very, very much. Helped a bunch. Okay. Well, there's a story here I want to read you first. It's not a story. It's a letter. It's from a non-commissioned officer in the United States Army. And this guy gets it, man. And if more people were willing to take this giant leap right here, and because of the political climate of the country, if more people would do this, more people would boycott businesses, refuse to go places, do things, buy things, you know, just, I guess it all falls under a boycott, but you have jobs for people that are not politically aligned with you, things like that, then quit. Find another job. And this guy did this. He had been in the Army let me just read the story, the letter to you. This letter was to someone named Ann, and I'm not sure, I didn't find out exactly who Ann was here. Oh, it was Ann Barnhart. Oh, okay. All right, gotcha. It's to Ann Barnhart. She's a very popular author and runs a blog out there called Barnhart. She's been very, very outspoken and threatened everything quite a bit since probably 2016, probably 10, 11 years ago is when she started getting some pretty serious death threats because of her stand on things and her things that she writes and whatnot. So here is a letter from this NCO. She says, I leave the Army for good in September of this year. My chain of command. Let me go down here and make sure that this is in fact. Doesn't say for sure if it's a he or a she. But anyway, I leave the Army for good in September this year. My chain of command has been shell shocked that I am going through with it. 2 years ago, when I first came to grips with what was happening and resolved to no longer be a part of it, there was a derision. And even an officer telling me that voicing my opinions about the state of the U.S. economy and its moral failings could be considered a violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice for conduct prejudicial to good order and discipline. Then I gave my operations NCO a copy of the book A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman. He came to me a month later stating that if there was a civil war, he and his fellow Hispanics will have to choose sides. When I told my first sergeant why I would not be reenlisting, she said, "Don't you want to reenlist to get your 20? I said I wanted to reenlist, but I couldn't, that my pension was nothing compared to being prepared to sacrifice my life. Then she and I went on to discuss my ideas on why there was a possible collapse of the U.S. government in the future. She went from denying the possibility at all to stating, "Well, it depends on what level of collapse you're talking about." Needless to say, I was stunned. The reenlistment NCO refuses to talk to me, and several other mid to senior level NCOs who previously thought I was kidding have left the active reserves for the individual ready reserves. One stated that he too was disgusted with both candidates for president and then asked if I thought things would be so bad, why wouldn't I stay in and try to fix things from the inside? I cited the example of the Yugoslav army and how there were firefights within units, and stated that I would refuse to follow unconstitutional orders. I then asked, don't you think if one of the two candidates gets in power that either might order the power of the state to be used against their political enemies? That's what would likely be likely to start those kind of firefights, right? There was a conversation here. The officer said, Sergeant, you are hereby ordered, this is a theoretical thing, Sergeant, you are hereby ordered to take your platoon to do unconstitutional thing X. Me? No. Officer? Staff Sergeant? Arrest this Sergeant First Class. Me? Click. Don't move, sir. Staff Sergeant? Uh-oh. The other NCO just kind of smiled grimly and nodded. His friend, a warrant officer, whom I have known since 2009, then blurted out, well, that won't happen anyway. The U.S. government can't collapse. Too many people depend on it. We both stared at him, and he looked embarrassed almost immediately. He's not a stupid man, but it shows the mindset most are locked into, no matter how illogical it is. I have many more anecdotes, but the summary is this. Whereas I was laughed at two years ago, many other senior NCOs are leaving. Many enlisted men are frightened and wish to get out. The liberals, humanists, atheists, and feminists are taking over. Every single person over the past 2 years, from family, friends, and colleagues to acquaintances and others in the civilian world who hear I am getting out after 15 years, always start with the same argument. What about your pension and health care? My own brother, an amateur military historian, asked me the same question last week, and I said, you studied military history for 8 years in school and as a hobby your whole adult life. If you had to go up against a military composed entirely of people who were there just to get their retirement benefits, how easy would that army be to defeat? Silence. Mic drop. Mic meaning microphone. And it's been rough. I love the U.S. Army. At times I have been reduced to tears thinking about putting on the uniform for the last time. But I cannot be a part of an army that serves a government like ours. Thank you for being out there and fighting the good fight. So, after 15 years, in a minute, just 5 years, to go to get full retirement, and this Sergeant First Class said, I can't do this anymore. I won't do this anymore. I no longer trust my government. I no longer trust my chain of command. Bad things are coming. It's fixing to happen. And I'm out of here. I can't do this. I've got to find something else to get me by here. So, yeah, Peanut Rider. Yeah, Ann doesn't have a mild dislike for Muslims. No. Ann is very, very outspoken about her dislike for Muslims, no doubt about it. But, look at what's going on in Venezuela. Keep watching it. It keeps getting worse. There are no signs in sight of this getting any better in Venezuela. I mean, stores are empty, food lines are long, people are hungry, violence is commonplace. And I just for the life of me can't figure out why Americans think that it happens everywhere in the world except here. Well, I think they're going to become surprised, a little put out here before long. I don't know if you guys saw, you Facebookers. Yeah, that's right, Doc. I don't know if you Facebookers saw what I put on Facebook here a couple days ago. Part of it, about half of it, was something that I wrote several years ago. And I put it up there again because there was some new information. I changed quite a bit in the beginning. And then I just kind of fixed some typos and stuff in the old part of it and just reposted it back where it was at on my blog. And for those of you that don't know where my blog is, go to theshootingbench.info. And you can go in there right up at the top if you wish to subscribe to it, get email notices for it. Just there's a little deal up at the top. You just fill out a little form. The email addresses and stuff are not public, not anything anybody can see, except me, excuse me. So if you want to get in on that, well, knock yourself out. But I did this, and I don't know whether to... We got 2 hours here. I don't know whether to read this whole thing to you or not. But we'll see. I might do it in a little while. I tell you what, it's got a... It has got a lot of interest on Facebook, I can tell you that. Wow. It's just been going crazy there. So, anyway. Let me get back over here real quick before we start anything else. I want to look in the chat room and see see who all is there. Well, Pumpkin Cat, I might do that. You know, Peanut Rider, that Gabe comes up with some pretty interesting stuff, and that latest thing that he just wrote is something that that I was made aware of back in, it's been about 2 years ago now, and I don't know if I told you about it. There was a guy who lives here locally that spent a good bit of time in the military and got out and went to work for Blackwater. And he did a lot of stuff. He stayed in Iraq for a long time. He really grew to love a lot of those people over there. And his propensity to make headshots at times when it wasn't called for on targets, you know, practicing and things. I said, why do you do that? And I see a lot of guys do it that don't have any idea why they do it. They're just trying to show off. They just want to be, they want to be cool. Headshots are not always the best thing to take. You have a very small target there, and if it's necessary, fine. If it's not, then you know there's larger, easier, faster targets to make. But he said, you know, where I was, there were so many guys over there that all they had to do was pull a string, and they could do that as they were dying. You could put, you know, two or three to the chest, and all three of them go through the heart and lungs, and he could still pull that string. And the other thing is, you shoot them in the chest, they may be wearing a vest. We got, unless they were just wearing a t-shirt, we just got out of the habit of doing it and made headshots, you know, almost exclusively, unless there was some reason to believe that that the guy was not wearing a vest. He said there an explosive vest. I don't mean a bulletproof vest, but that the same could be said for a bulletproof vest for ballistic armor. And that is, you know, you make those two or three shots in the thoracic cavity area and get zero results out of it, then you've just wasted a lot of time and a little bit of ammo. So, hence the reason for the two to the chest and one to the head drill, the Mozambique drill. And that is to make your shots to the chest. If they work, great. If they don't, then you're already on track to go to the headshot. So, all right, let's. Yeah, well, it just takes the right level of vest. You know, that's true, Doc. But most people don't wear the level of vest that it takes to stop a 308. And even when they do, you know, there's just so many other places. Even if it's just a ballistic vest and not an explosive vest, there's lots of other things you can do. You take a 308 and hit somebody in the groin, in the pelvis, where there's lots of bones and big bones right there, a lot of structural stuff. He's going to have a bad day. Chances are pretty good he's going to bleed out in just a few seconds, because when that pelvis and top of your femur and everything shatters and cuts the artery in two right there, you know, or destroys it, then he's going down pretty fast. I mean, he'll go down instantly anyway because it's a structural bone. But, you know, there's other places you just have to know where that, what all that vest covers, and choose where to make a shot. Now, the thing you have to remember, if we could do that, we had this discussion here last week about wearing vests. If we know where to shoot and avoid those vests, you can bet that there's other people that do too. So that's why I choose to. I've got two or three vests, and it's for more for my family than for me. But you know, like I said, in a vehicle, in a sandbag position, a static position somewhere, it might not be a bad idea. But out moving in the woods, I would opt to do without it and have more mobility. Because if there's somebody out there shooting, they're gonna know where those vulnerable spots are too. So I'm not convinced that they've saved lives. There's no question about that. No question at all. I just choose to do otherwise. All right, Pumpkin Cat wants me to read that deal. I don't know if any of the rest of you do or not. We'll wait and see if we get any more response here. Otherwise, I'll just have to send Pumpkin Cat a link to it. But not like we don't have plenty to do here. We've had a lot of things go on here lately. Let's see, I can do away with that right now. Don't need to bring that back up. I think what the format's going to be is we're going to have, I wasn't prepared to do it tonight, but I think what's going to probably happen here is I'll do a short break at 20 after and at 40 after, and then a longer break at the top of the hour, and then another one at 20 after and 40 after in the second hour. And I think that's probably what I'm looking at doing here. So with any luck, now it's a hard thing going to be. I'm going to have to set an alarm or something to help me remember to do it, because I've been doing it right at the bottom of the hour for so long. But I don't know. We'll just see how it works out. It's going to have to be that damn formal, I guess. All right. Let's see here. Let me move some of this stuff out of the way. All right, we've got two so far. And, you know, while we're deciding here, I want you to listen to something here. This is how, some of you have probably heard this before, but this is how Ronald Reagan handled protesters from the chair here. From his seat at the press conference or whatever it was. News thing. Come on. Or maybe not. Yep, we are waiting patiently here for President Reagan to come in and share this with us. I swear, if it ain't one thing, it's another. 10 others. Well, actually, maybe what we won't do this. This little video clip right here has had 23 million views. And for whatever reason, it will not play for me. It looks like it's still thinking about it, so we're going to give it one more chance here. All right, well, never mind. You had your chance. Wait, it's moving. It's not moving very fast. All right, forget it. That's enough. It was fun, but okay, let's look at something else here. This is completely unrelated, but you, Amy, is your computer on in there? Tune it in and listen to this. You know, you hear that, what's that guy's name, Mark Dice or something, that goes around and does these interviews on the street around college kids and stuff? And he asks them simplest questions, you know. Like who won the Revolutionary War, or who won World War II, or who's the vice president, or something like that. Simple questions that everybody in America over the age of 9 should probably know, or most of them anyway. But this is a kid here. This girl is a I don't know if she's a student reporter for the local, you know, school newspaper or what she is, but she's doing this for somebody called Polytech. And she's asking, she's talking to, I'm assuming they're college age kids. They're all, huh? All right. Well, Amy just said that Polytech.
Hello, everyone. I'm Courtney Plunk with Polytech. We're here on our home campus at Texas Tech to see just how much our fellow...
Why did you stop? You were doing so good. Amy said Polytech is a college in Southern California. Okay. Now, let's see if we can make this happen again. I'm really growing weary of this. Problems here.
Let students know about their country. Who won the Civil War?
Who won the Civil War?
We did? The South?
Like the one in 1965 or what Civil War?
Who won it?
Who was even in it?
Who was in it? Just tell me who was in it.
Oh, I don't know.
Why you made me do this?
Who won the Civil War?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Hey, I'm drawing a blank on some of those things. I feel like I'm on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
America? I don't know.
That's the Confederates, right? I have no clue.
The Union. The North.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So who is our vice president?
Don't know.
I have no idea.
Of right now? I don't know.
What's his name? Oh my gosh. I have a name in my, I have a space in my head.
Who is the vice president? Is that like a trick question?
Nope.
Okay. I don't know. I have no idea.
I have no idea.
Don't know.
Joe Biden.
Yes.
I don't know.
You're not the only one. A lot of people don't know.
I still feel so.
Okay, who did we gain our independence from?
These are horrible.
I have no idea. Do you know what year we happened to?
Absolutely not.
I couldn't tell you.
So like 1677 or something like that.
And what show is Snooki on?
Jersey Shore.
What show is Snooki on?
The Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore.
And then who is Brad Pitt married to?
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie. And who was he married to before that?
think it was Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston?
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston.
Awesome. Thank you.
Can you even believe that? I was stunned when I watched. I liked watching the thing. You know, they're on the outside when you first start watching them, you say, well, it's funny, it's real funny. It's not funny. It's not a damn bit funny. You know, they start asking all these kids, you know, who's Brad Pitt married to? Snooki. Who in hell is Snooki? I don't see what everybody else on this damn thing knew who it was. I wish I had more than I could say about that, but I don't know what in the world I would do. Anyway, and that's sad. Long slide. That is our future. You know, when Thomas Paine said, "If there must be trouble, let it be in my time." So that my children will know peace. Well, you know, right now, if there's going to be trouble, it needs to be our time because our children are too damn stupid to do anything and they don't even know what they're fighting for. Now, obviously, that's not all of them. I mean, I know there's a good many kids out there that are well-educated, but if you look at the number of kids that know and have some idea what's going on in the country versus the number that are just like these airheads right here, then we're doomed. If we don't get this taken care of in our generation, in our time here, then I feel that it's unlikely that it's going to be taken care of. Just doesn't look very promising right now. Xbox, Starbucks, Dances with the Stars, all that kind of stuff. But they sure know who the movie stars are married to.
You ask me why I love her? Well, give me time. I'll explain. You seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way? Have you watched the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay? Have you heard a Bob White calling in the Carolina pines? Or heard the bellow of a diesel at the Appalachia mines? Is the call of the Niagara thrilling when you hear her waters roar? Look with awe and wonder at her Massachusetts shore, where men who braved a hard new world first stepped on Plymouth Rock. Do you think of them when you stroll along a New York City dock? Have you seen a snowflake drifting in the Rockies way up high? Have you seen the sun come blazing down from the bright Nevada sky? Do you hail to the Columbia as she rushes in the sea, or how you're headed to Gettysburg, our struggle to be free? Have you seen the mighty Tetons? You watched an eagle soar? Have you seen the Mississippi roll along Missouri's shore? Have you felt a chill at Michigan when on a winter's day her waters rage along the shore in thunderous display? Does the word aloha make you warm? Do you stare in disbelief when you see the surf come roaring in at Waimea Reef? From Alaska's cold to the Everglades, from the Rio Grande to Maine, my heart cries out. My pulse runs fast, the might of her domain. You ask me why I love her? I've a million reasons why. My beautiful America, beneath God's wide, wide sky.
Thank you.
chair would remind all members that they should not traffic the well while members are under recognition.
Don't forget the keys under the man.
The gentleman from Virginia is recognized for reading.
Childhood star shine, always stay humble and kind.
Hi everyone, remember me? This is Amy. If you haven't noticed, I've taken a short hiatus from my show. I'll be back on a steady schedule in the early fall, though. As for now, I'll be on Monday evenings only at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. I won't forget about you, so please don't forget about me.
Where you going, don't forget, turn back around. Help the next one in line. Always stay humble and kind.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back here, and we've got a couple of texts also of people that wanted to hear that, so I guess I'm going to read it here in a minute. Let me see if I can find it and bring it up here again. All right, so part of this some of you may have heard before. I don't know if I ever read it on the air, but it's been on my blog for quite a while. And obviously you know what my ideas and stuff are here. But I'm going to go ahead and read this to you. It's a little bit long, but we still got another hour and 19 minutes, so we'll make it work. Every time I think things are about as bad as they're going to get, they get worse. Federal government's accountability level is now at zero. The direct disregard for the Constitution and violation of our rights is more blatant and in our faces now than ever. Can it get any worse? Tell me how much different this is than 1938 Germany. Property being stolen, bank accounts being seized, permits, fees, penalties in everything we do, innocent, peaceful citizens being injured and murdered with monotonous regularity. How much different is this than 1938 Germany? This may be the last election until after the reboot. This election is more critical to our freedom and our future than in any other election in the history of the United States. I have no expectations of Trump solving all of our problems. He may not solve any of them, but I can tell you for damn sure that if we allow Hillary to get in there, our troubles will have just begun. If Trump changes nothing, at least we'll be no worse off than we are now. If he does 5% of what he says he'll do, we'll be 500% better off. I'll say this one more time. If Hillary gets in there and appoints even one more liberal Supreme Court justice, it is unlikely that we will ever see another ruling in our favor in our lifetime. Think about this. Hillary and her cohorts are not simply evil. They're diabolical, sly, cunning, calculating. She will not appoint only one justice. If Hillary serves 4 years, she'll serve 8, maybe more. She'll likely see at least 3 other justices die or retire. She will likely have the pleasure of appointing at least 4 justices during her presidency, and be assured that she'll pick young ones that could conceivably serve 40 or 50 years. That means that few, if any, adults over the age of 30 now will ever see the Supreme Court of the United States rule in our favor again on most vital issues. You will die before that happens. So go ahead, sit on your dead ass on election day and pound your chest and brag about what a wonderful thing you did by not voting for the lesser of two evils. Go ahead and write in your favorite hero that has zero chance of getting in there. Hillary and every other liberal in the country will thank you. Any other election in my lifetime, I would have agreed with you. This is not any other election. This is the final nail. Will you help drive it? And this is where the original thing that I wrote 4 years ago, for basically the same reasons here. It's called Democrats, Enemies of Freedom. We're currently in a war over our liberty. Technically, we have been for some time, but we have reached a point in this war where the battle lines must be more clearly defined. I don't know if everyone completely understands how bad it actually is now, or how fast our liberties are deteriorating, or how bad it will get in the future. Of all the enemies that we have made around the world, the very worst one is right here at home, the Democratic Party. Primarily liberal Democrats, which, as it happens, makes up most of the party. Yes, I'm aware that there are a smattering of Democrats that are, in actuality, more conservative, but they are few and far between. This post probably doesn't apply to them. The party itself has done more damage to our way of life and our heritage than any other single factor. It is absolutely incomprehensible to me how anyone that professes to be an American can support the Democratic Party. It is absolutely incomprehensible to me how any member of any minority can support the Democratic Party after what they have taken from you. It is absolutely incomprehensible to me how any blue-collar working man or woman can support the Democratic Party. It is absolutely incomprehensible to me how any man or woman that is trying to run a business can support the Democratic Party. Are you freaking stupid? You are the problem with this country. You have become enemies of the Constitution of the United States. You have become an enemy to me and my family and our way of life. If you claim to be a liberal Democrat, you are no friend to me or mine. If you're family, I'm sorry, but we have nothing to discuss. You're not family to me if you support the idiocy that is going on in this country brought about by the libtards of the left. Yeah, I'm well aware of the problems within the Republican Party, but one step at a time. Liberalism is not a political choice. It is an incurable mental illness that has done more damage to our country in the last two decades than our enemies have in the last 200 years. No, we cannot just get along. No, we cannot work this out. If you have somehow managed to become a friend on Facebook, just go ahead and leave now. If I find out, I will unfriend you and block you. And while we're on the subject, don't send me any stupid game requests, invites to some crap that I don't even know what is or don't care anything about. Maybe you don't know just how damn serious I am about this. My country has fallen apart, and you are more to blame than any other factor, and I damn well don't appreciate it. Yes, if one were to truly repent of their idiocy and change their party affiliation and liberal ideals, I would forgive you and welcome you back, but until then, consider yourselves blackballed from every aspect of my life. If I have offended you, that's tough. Put on your big kid panties and deal with it. I'm sick and tired of the violations of my personal rights, unconstitutional and unreasonable taxes, policies, penalties, fines, rules, debt, political correctness, liability scares, invasions from my home of my home and privacy, permits, licenses, and fear of simply driving down the street. The gloves are off, libtards. Get out of my life, all of you. This is no longer simply a political opinion. We can no longer just shake hands, go play golf, and good-naturedly poke fun at each other until the next election. Any elections gone by, maybe. Not anymore. Those of you who understand what America and freedom are all about, and are willing to fight to maintain it, welcome, brothers and sisters. Roll up your sleeves and get with it. We have a hell of a lot of work to do. Okay, well, that's the long and short of it right there. Excuse me just one second here. Goodness. All right, well, let's see. Got another story here we need to bring up here. Several of them, as a matter of fact. I'm going to put the link to that in the chat room for you, just for the heck of it. if you feel like you'd like to share that with any of your friends that might be sitting on a fence or just want to make a point, well, let's see here. Let's see if I got this right. Doesn't seem to be. There it goes. All right, I did it. How about that? There you go. All right. The, goodness, I don't know what's going on here. I don't even smoke anymore. I'm having a problem keeping keeping everything operating here. Okay, there is changing gears here again. Now remember, Wednesdays is dedicated. Wednesdays are dedicated to gun stuff. But that doesn't mean that there can't be gun stuff other times. So we have gun stuff. And we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this. It basically confirms a lot of the things that I've talked about in my over the last probably the last less than 10 years. The last 5 or 6 years, I have really changed my mind about the 9mm. I never had the dislike for it and the distrust for it that some people do. I never figured that there was a degree of sexual dysfunctionality there that caused you to not like the smaller bullets at all, thinking that you had to have something so much larger just to get the job done. Now, just if you like the large one, that's fine. I have no problem with it. But to discredit the 9mm because of your like for other calibers doesn't make any sense. Because the 9mm is pretty tough. But there's, as this story says here, at the turn of the 20th century, all the major militaries of the world had ditched their single-shot 45-bore black powder cartridge service rifles in favor of a 30-caliber small bore. And the early ballisticians of the day were so enamored with the idea of great velocity, also toyed with the idea of 30-caliber service pistols. Well, there was several reasons here that they gave for switching over, or maybe not switching over, but just trying to let people know that there are good reasons why the 9mm is still with us, and undoubtedly will be for from now on. I don't think there's any possibility that it's ever going to go away. And they cite velocity. The velocity, of course, makes the bullets work better. Yeah, I know a 45 is already 45, whether it expands or not. But it still doesn't have what would you call it, the hydrostatic shock and everything. It does have energy, but if that bullet doesn't perform and do something, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to, your full metal jacket at 45, regardless of it being a 45, is not going to be necessarily a fight stopper. It may not. The 9mm with good quality bullet. Now, I'll also say the 9mm with a full metal jacket certainly is not going to be either. If I had to choose between the two, and that's all the choice I had, was full metal jacket 45 or full metal jacket 9mm, I would probably take the 45. But if I have my choice of bullets, I would probably take the 9mm. It's they expand pretty violently. Given the right style of bullet, because they have the higher velocity. You take something that runs 11, 12, you might even squeeze 1,300 feet a second out of some of them, that bullet's going to work. At 750, 800, 830, 850 feet a second, it may or may not. There's been lots and lots and lots of changes a lot of research on the 45 to get it to expand at all at those velocities. Finally, about 1998, that started happening. And the 45 started taking a little step up. Up until that point, it was less than the 9 millimeter as far as in actual shootings. But we've been over through that before, so we won't go into that. So they cite velocity, expense, capacity, accuracy, low recoil, all the number of things that we've talked about on here quite a few times, and the selection of bullets, this is the different loadings, the selection of weapons to put them in, being able to fit more people's hands. You know, there's not any really diminutive, small, easy to handle 45s out there. There are a lot of very small, very effective little 9mm for pocket guns. So the guy was very gracious in his writing. He's didn't put down anything or anybody for their choice. He's just simply telling you what he thinks about the 9mm. And I've told everybody, if whatever works for you, and you're comfortable with it, and you can do things at the same, you know, relatively close to the same speed and effectiveness as your shooting companions here with what they use, then by all means, stick with it if that's what you're used to, and it works for you. But you know, just don't think that some of these other calibers are useless. You know, there's another story here, and I'm gonna get into this. Matter of fact, I think I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna find it for you. And there was another one that a guy just recently did here on the an alternate look here at stopping power. And let's see if I can find it. Don't tell me. I may have to take a break. There it is. Okay. Now, I don't agree with this guy at all. I'm going to go through, and I do agree in one regard. Doc and I have talked about this. I agree that any gun that you use of any caliber, any bullet configuration will work if you put the holes in the right place. You may have to shoot them in the eye, but they'll work. As far as just thoracic cavity, you know, chest shots there, center mass shots, most of your most common calibers, really there's not that much of a difference. I mean, there's obviously some better than others. But the way this guy figures this, anything from, and I don't agree with all of these. In the first place, when he did his comparison with the 22, he compared short, long, and long rifle, all lumped them all into the same deal here. So quite obviously, I don't agree with that. And there's several things that in his study, and we'll go over that after the break. There's several things I don't agree with, but his overall assessment when he was done was what we've told you here time and time and time again, is whatever works for you. You know, you are more the weapon than what you carry. It's just a tool. The amount of your willpower, your mindset, your training means that you can, or lack thereof, will be what ultimately makes you either successful or unsuccessful in the fight. Long slide, son, if they come out with a Glock 22 Magnum, I'd get rid of every handgun I've got. I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but man, how awesome would that be? Jeez, in that size of grip, you could have a you know, a 35 round, you know, you could put a whole box of shells in that grip if you could just get something that would feed reliably with that that rim and everything on there. Yeah, that would be awesome. I would very much like that. All right, well, let's see here. Let me go over here and let's take a little break, and I'll be back here very shortly.
Yeah.
The Shooting Bench is making some major changes. Starting the 1st of August, the Shooting Bench is only going to be on 3 days a week. 3 days? Well, not to worry. I'm going to take a couple of days off and you get an extra hour of listening time. Catch the Shooting Bench now at its regular time on Monday and Wednesday, but for 2 hours. The second hour on Wednesday will be all gun talk, outdoor stuff. Your extra hour comes in on Friday, where we start at 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 Eastern, and run for 3 hours. An hour to catch up on news and current events and Liberty Lounge at its regular time. Join me for the Shooting Bench right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. I'm a good old boy. You know my mama loved me. But you don't understand. They keep on showing my hands and not my face on TV. Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back, starting our second hour here. Got into a little bit of gun talk here at the end of the last hour, so we're going to continue on with that here for a little bit. Oh, let me tell you, there's next Wednesday. Next Wednesday will be live, and it will be from a, I'm not sure exactly where yet, but it's going to be probably from a restaurant in Sholo. Reason being is because we have our favorite constitutional sheriff candidate, who is going to be my guest host, co-host. And we're going to talk about, he's going to be on the full time. And I want you guys to hear what a real constitutional sheriff has to say. He's run a good campaign so far. There's been a little bit of, I can't say mudslinging going back and forth, because his opponent, one of them, has said some things that were not true, and so were have some of the people on her side. And the thing that is now, Graham Harbold is who we're talking about, and he has had some researchers look up some things and has verification of quite a few things. I'm not even going to get into all of that stuff, because it probably doesn't matter to any of you guys, but I'll say that as of today, anything that has to do with his opponent will not be mentioned at all. He's not going to go the way that he's not going to go that way. So I think you'll be pleased to hear what he says, what he's got to say, and what his values, what his plans are for Navajo County in the future. I think he's got a really, really good chance of getting in there. I hope for Navajo County's sake that is a fact. But all right, let me see here. A long slide, it's a good point. Long slide says the feds may try to eliminate constitutional sheriffs. They are definitely a threat to the federal plan there. I can't think of the word I'm trying to get, but anyway, that's it's not going to work out well for them. If we had 3,400 constitutional sheriffs out there, things would change in about 12 minutes, something like that. Country would change very quickly and very, very dramatically. Well, let's get back to this this 9mm, or this, it was a 9mm that started this discussion. You know, when we had, we talked about the one-shot stop deal, and I'm very, very confident in the Marshall, Evan Marshall and Ed Sanow's study or survey of one-shot stop probabilities, and there are the parameters that they set and everything. I like it, and I'm comfortable with it. I think it's very factual, and we won't go into all that. We've talked about it on the show here a number of times, but this guy, I'm not entirely enamored with the way he did this. But it's how he did it, so that's what we're going to talk about here. This guy is very adamant that he has no dog in this fight. He's not a, you know, he says whatever he carries and what he does and whatever you carry and what you do has nothing to do with anything. This guy worked on this, he says, for 10 years. Said over a 10-year period, I kept track of stopping power results from every shooting I could find. I talked to participants of gunfights, read police reports, attended autopsies, and scoured the newspapers, magazines, and internet for any reliable accounts of what happened to the human body when it was shot. And that is exactly what Evan Marshall did. Exactly. The difference is, I think that Evan Marshall narrowed his parameters down a little more, and this guy added more to it, which made it rather confusing to me. He says he documented all of the data that he could, tracking caliber, type of bullet if known, where the bullet hit, and whether or not the person was incapacitated. I also tracked fatalities, noting which bullets were more likely to kill and which were not. It was an exhaustive project, but I'm glad I did it, and I'm happy to report the results of my study here. Before I get into details, let's see, he just talks about him not having a dog in this fight. He says, I'm not being paid by any firearm or ammunition manufacturer. I carry a lot of different pistols for self-defense. Within the last 2 weeks, I've carried a .22 Magnum, a .380, a .38 Special Revolver, three different 9mm autos, and a .45 auto. See, that's where we start parting ways right there. I am vehemently opposed to carrying multiple different guns different days because of whatever, because you wake up with this idea in your head that, oh, that one, I haven't petted that one for like a week. I haven't seen it, you know, I haven't been out of the safe for 2 months. I think I'll carry it today just because I haven't for a while. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with it a damn little bit. I have seen through induced stress in training many, many times the failures of people for being unfamiliar with their guns. I haven't done it with handguns, but I've done it with long guns. I've had everybody at a rifle class lay their guns down on the mat in front of them and take 2 steps to the right, and the guy, last 2 guys on the end, coming back up to the other end, and start going through the same type of drills. And you should see the cluster coitus that happens when you do that. It's unreal. And so, and to me, that is not one iota different than people that will carry a Glock one day, a 1911 another day. The fact is that most of us don't train enough to be good with all, to be real good with a whole bunch of different kinds of guns. You should be familiar. You should be able to handle it, you know, and look at it and study it for a few seconds and be able to get it into action right away. You know, I'm okay with that. But under stress and a life or death situation, you know, it's a rare individual that will pick up somebody else's gun that they, something they've never handled before, never seen, and do well with it. Yeah, I know that you own 13 different types of pistols, and you've shot them all. You're familiar with all of them. But how is it going to be if you carried a Glock yesterday, and today, just one day later, you carry a revolver and get attacked? So I'm vehemently opposed to that, but that's neither, I guess this guy probably didn't care one way or the other what I was opposed to. But. So anyway, he said, he says since it was his study, he got to determine all the different variables and their definitions. Okay, everybody does if you start your own deal. He said he started out with the number of people shot with a particular round, the number of rounds that hit, that contacted the target at all. On the average, how many rounds did it take for the person to stop the violent action or be incapacitated? Now, the difference here is he included hits anywhere on the body. Well, Evan Marshall and them and Ed Sanow did not. They included only thoracic cavity hits because center mass hits, because he wanted to see how the bullet performance worked, not how the psychological performance of the person worked. And I've said before is that some people will get shot in the elbow with a hollow point 40 caliber bullet and the lower part of the arm just goes to swinging because it's basically been severed. Well, chances are pretty good that that person is done. Unless they are highly trained, highly motivated and disciplined and very angry or on a lot of drugs, then they're probably not going to keep fighting. So was that a one-shot stop? Sure. As a one-shot stop between the eyes would be. One shot between the eyes would be a one-shot stop. But that wasn't the idea. We wanted to see what type of gun, what type of bullet, and what caliber that you should be carrying. That was Evan Marr, which makes much, much more sense to me. But, okay, he says, for this number, I included hits anywhere on the body to be considered an immediate incapacitation. I used criteria similar to Evan Marshall's. If the attacker was striking or shooting the victim, the round needed to immediately stop the attack without another blow being thrown or another shot being fired. Okay, I'm good with that. If the person shot was in the act of running, either towards or away from the shooter, he must have fallen to the ground within 5 feet. I'm okay with that. I also excluded all cases of accidental shootings or suicides. Every shot in this study took place during a military battle or an altercation with a criminal. Next, what percentage of shooting incidents resulted in fatalities? For this, I included only hits to the head or torso. See, I don't necessarily agree with that, because you have quite a number of headshots that result in fatalities, not all of them, but a very large percentage, regardless of caliber, regardless of bullet type. So that's really kind of an irrelevant consideration. What percentage of people were not incapacitated, no matter how many rounds hit them? Okay, well, that's relevant, I guess. It depends on bullet style and controlled substances and whatnot. Accuracy. What percentage of hits was in the head or torso? I tracked this to check if variations could affect stopping power. For example, if one caliber had a huge percentage of shootings resulting in arm hits, we may expect that the stopping power of that round wouldn't look as good as a caliber where the majority of rounds hit the head. Well, I still don't get the correlation here. I don't get the deal between arm shots and head shots. We know that head shots almost certainly are not 100%, but a very large percentage of them are one-shot stops. So I don't know how you can compare that to arm hits. He said next one is one-shot stop percentage. The number of incapacitations divided by the number of hits the person took. Like Marshall's number, I only included hits to the torso or head in this number. There he goes with his head shots again. The next one is percentage of people who were immediately stopped with one hit to the head or torso. The head and torso hits should have been kept separate, because I think that throws the whole thing off. let me go down and look through the chat room here real quick. Radio Doc, I appreciate that, buddy. We had a good time working together. Radio Doc actually had a CB shop there. He was our lead technician of the CB shop, and people came from miles around to have Tebow install the install radios and tune them up and stuff. He is damn sure good at what he does. If you guys want to get a good CB and get it tuned up where it works really well, send it to Radio Doc. He will doctor it up. Amy just showed me headlines. Man in boxers leads police on brief chase. Oh, man. So, none of these statistics include, you know, if or how much drugs people were taking or anything like that. So, obviously, all of these studies are skewed to some degree, if nothing else, just for that reason alone. But we're not going to go through all of these because there's too many. But just a few things that came to mind here. I'll read the whole deal here for the 25 ACP. That was the first one that he put. I don't know why he didn't put the 22 first, but out of the number of people shot, 68, 150 hits, 25 of those were fatal, 25%, I'm sorry. Average number of rounds until incapacitation, 2.2. I think that's probably a lot lower because he included headshots. If there were any headshots with this particular caliber, if you have three thoracic cavity hits for one shooting before he stops, or one headshot for three shootings before he stops, then that changes things dramatically. The numbers will be vastly different. Percentage of people who were not incapacitated, 35%. Now that's a telling number there. One shot stop percentage, 30%. So that's high, because he included headshots. Evan and Marshall were very specific about their where the shots were allowed to be counted, and it was only 21-22% depending on bullet style. Accuracy, let's see, one shot stop 30%. Accuracy, head and torso hits, 62%. Percentage actually incapacitated by one shot, torso or head, 49%. Again, I think that's terribly skewed. Because even with the 25, if half of these people were shot in the head, then that doesn't give you a true number whatsoever. And by comparison with the 22, now this is what I didn't understand either. He included the short, long, and long rifle all in the same deal. And that should not have been. These results should not even be admissible by the court. Because you the short and the long rifle, you know, a short solid and a long rifle hollow point, there's no comparison. They're not even in the same ballpark. Not even in the same zip code. Out of the number of people shot, it was 154, 213 hits, 34% were fatal. Obviously, skewed again because of the headshots. Number of rounds until incapacitation, 1.38. That is substantially better than the 2.2 of the 25. Percentage of people who were not incapacitated, not too much different than the 25, 31%. One shot stops, 31%. 1% higher than the 25. Accuracy, 76%. Well, there's not really any good way to compare that because we don't know there are very few, if any, match grade pocket 25 calibers out there. There are, however, a tremendous number of extremely accurate 22, both revolvers and semi-automatics. So that those two do not compute, Will Robinson. Percentage actually incapacitated by one shot to the target, 60%. Still doesn't really do much for me. So let's get up here. Okay, what we saw on this one, the 22 and the... There's one particular number here that I want you to pay attention to. And that is the average number of rounds until incapacitation. It was 2.2 on the 25, 1.38 on the 22. Keep those numbers in mind for a minute. If we go to the 32, it is 1.52, 1.76 for the 380. Now here's where it changes. With the 38 special, we go up to 1.87. This is the average number of rounds until incapacitation. The 9mm is the highest so far at 2.45. Why is that? I submit to you that number is higher because there is a larger number with all the military surplus and stuff out there, that there are a larger number of people that use full metal jacketed ammunition. That number is going to be higher. When you look at any of the other calibers that we've mentioned so far, when you walk into the store, into Walmart to buy a box, you're as apt to find good quality hollow points as you are anything. With the 9mm, you're more apt to find full metal jackets because people buy it in such vast numbers and practice with it a lot that there's going to be... Hang on a second. I was looking at these numbers here. When you go to the 357 Magnum, they use both Magnum and SIG. So I think there's enough difference between those two that they should be their own thing. But average number of rounds, 1.7. With the 40 Smith & Wesson, now Evan Marshall and Ed Sanow found out that the 40 Smith & Wesson has exactly the same one-shot stop probability as the 357 Magnum at 96%. But according to this, the average number of rounds until incapacitation, 1.7 with the 357 Magnum, 2.36 with the 40. That doesn't compute. Number of people who were not incapacitated was only 13% with the 40 and 9% with the 357. But if we go up here back to the 9mm, even though the average number of rounds until incapacitation was higher, the percentage that were not incapacitated was the same as the 40 at 13%. And some of these smaller ones here, let's see, 16% with the 380, but 40% with the 32. And the 45 ACP, we had 209 people shot, 436 rounds fired, or 436 hits. Percentage of hits that were fatal, 29%. Average number of rounds until incapacitation, 2.08. Percentage of people who were not incapacitated, 14%. 1% more than the 9mm. One shot stop percentage, 39%. That was 45% with the 40, 44% with the 357, 44% with the 380. No. Yeah. And only 31% with the 9mm. Again, I blame that on the full metal jacketed bullets. Accuracy hit 85%. Excuse me. Percentage of people actually incapacitated by one shot to torso or head, 51%. 52% for the 40, 61 for the 357, 55 for the 38 special, 62 for the 380. You know, look at these numbers. It looks like they almost got the 380 and the 9mm exactly reversed. I have to check on that. Anyway, that's this guy's take on stopping. I think there's a lot of things there that really, really skew those numbers quite a bit. So I'm not terribly convinced that that is... he's put a lot of work into it, and I applaud his efforts to do it, but I'm really not convinced that that those are very conclusive, I guess is the word I'm looking for. So, anyway, we'll keep you updated on that if something else comes along. Marshall and Sanow have done theirs every few years. They do it again, and really it's been pretty consistent. There hasn't been very many changes at all over all this period of time there. Okay, let's see here. I have an idea. It is the bottom of the hour again, so I want to play this because I like it. Tell her.
things will get better again. Somehow she's keeping it all inside her. But finally the tears fill our eyes, and I know that somewhere tonight she knows how
like that song so much, but I love it. That's one of my favorites. All right, now let's. This guy admits that the numbers are skewed. He's come up with kind of the same idea that we had just talked about towards the end of the article here. He's got a little graph, a little bar graph that shows the 32. Oh, please. Do we have to start this right in the middle of the show? Thank you. You're right there. He shows the 32 at about 70-71% of people actually incapacitated by one shot, torso or head. How can you possibly compare those two things? I mean, you can compare them, but how can you put them in the same category? Well, out of all the calibers listed, from 25 to 12 gauge shotgun, the 32 is the third highest actually incapacitated by one shot. So that leads me to think that because people know that they have a minuscule little 32 gun in their pocket for fun, that they intentionally would attempt more headshots because of the little gun. Was that a possibility? If it is, then this bar graph is completely useless. He says one other thing to look at is the 9mm data. A huge number, over half of the 9mm shootings involved ball ammo. Imagine my surprise. I think that skewed the results of the study in a negative manner. One can reasonably expect, that Full Metal Jacket ammo was not stopped as well as a state-of-the-art expanding bullet. I personally believe that the 9mm is a better stopper than the numbers here indicate, but you can make that decision for yourself based on the data presented. You can't make the decision for yourself. You do not. Your data is skewed. You said so yourself. Not only because of the Full Metal Jacket of bullet, but because you added head shots and torso shots in the same category for one-shot stop probability. Makes no sense whatsoever. He said, I think the most interesting statistic is the percentage of people who stopped with one shot at the torso or head. There wasn't very much variation between calibers, between the most common defensive calibers, 38, 9mm, 40, and 45, there was a spread of only 8 percentage points. No matter what gun you're shooting, you can only expect a little more than half of the people who shoot it to be immediately incapacitated by your first shot. I can agree with that, unless you shoot them in the head. Average number of rounds until incapacitation was remarkably similar between calibers. All the common defensive calibers required around 2 rounds on average to incapacitate. Well, I'm not a big fan of his study here, to tell you the truth. He goes on and on. It's pretty long, quite a bit of text at the end of this. He's bounces back and forth here, trying to justify some of the numbers that he put out there. And I just don't see how he can do it. I don't get it at all. Said, what matters even more than caliber is shot placement. Duh. Across all calibers, if you break down the incapacitations based on where the bullet hit, you will see some useful information. Headshots, 75% immediate incapacitation. Torso shots, 41% immediate incapacitation. So how can you put those in the same category? Extremity shots, 14% immediate incapacitation. There's three totally separate categories there, because the incapacitation, the reason for incapacitation is different on each of them. No matter which caliber you use, you have to hit something important in order to stop someone. Yeah, there you go. This study took me a long time and a lot of effort to complete. Despite the work it took, I'm glad I did it. The results I got from the study lead me to believe that there really isn't that much difference between most defensive handgun rounds and calibers. None is a death ray, but most worked adequately, even the lowly 22s. I've stopped worrying about trying to find the ultimate bullet. There isn't one. And I've stopped feeling the need to strap on my 45 every time I leave the house, out of fear that my 9mm doesn't have enough stopping power. Folks, carry what you want. Caliber really isn't that important. I'd say that is a true statement to a degree. I still wouldn't normally carry a 22. I wouldn't necessarily feel undergunned just because of my own abilities. But if I had to depend solely on the gun's abilities, on the bullet's abilities, then 22, 25, 32, probably not inclined to carry one. I think that there's a window there somewhere where speed, diameter, and weight all will make that risk versus reward scale tip in my favor. And then it gets up to a certain point where it does the same thing. So I think this window exists probably between the better quality 380s up to the, and I hate to say it, but I would include the 45 ACP in there, even though I'm not a fan of it. But you get bigger than that, the 45 Colt is a dismal stopper. It's like 25%, 20%. Less than the 45 ACP. Why? Well, because it is it's slow. Now, I'm talking about reloads, but it's very slow, and there's not... there is now, but when the last study was done with Sanow, there really wasn't any good defensive loads for the 45 out there, for the 45 Colt. There are some now. I don't know if those numbers, you know, how much they've changed, but... Doc, that's right. You know, the only reason I would say reasons for carrying a 22 may be because of the ease of racking the slide for people with degenerative arthritis or or you know, upper strength, body strength problems. In that case, you know, maybe a revolver would be better. But if they're having that much trouble with their upper body, they may not be able to affect a reload very quickly and efficiently. So, but as far as 22s, even if you carried the little Walther P22, yeah, you've got higher capacity, but that is the only thing that you've got going for it over the Glock 42 and 43, which are both six-round guns. But they're slimmer, lighter, and a lot more horsepower than the Walther P22. So why would you carry a P22? Or any 22? It's less noise. But the stopping probability and everything is it's not great. So I don't know why you would carry a 22. But Doc, I think that this coming Wednesday, day after tomorrow, I will try to remember to call you sometime tomorrow, so we can get on the same sheet of music here. But I would like to discuss that stuff that you emailed me or texted me about the other day. I think that'll be a good topic. But we're going to try to make sure, unless something dramatic happens to the world, for Wednesday nights are going to be back to gun talk again. Lot of subject that that we haven't touched on ever, and a lot of them can be expanded upon pretty dramatically. And there's a lot of people. Matter of fact, we'll probably on Wednesday nights we may open up the phone lines every once in a while just to get other people's ideas or questions or experiences with gun related things. And it can be anything from hunting to reloading to, you know, defensive shooting, training, carrying, how well they work when you know, drop them in a pan full of hot water and soap suds or whatever. I don't care. But we'll find something to talk about. There has been a, I think that Wells Fargo had come up with that. The date on that looks like it's fresh and new. I thought that was an older story. I know Bank of America has done that a lot. They've been a culprit for not dealing with anything that is involved with guns for quite a while. And that was when I gave up on them. you know, long slide, I think that's probably something that's taken place here a lot more. And that is because, you know, the banks are subject to fail, possibly. There are a lot of banks failing already. Very important banks overseas are stepping on the rainbow here. But people are you know, they're taking cash down to Walmart or wherever and getting a prepaid card and doing as much of their business as they can. A problem with that, there are a few people that will not accept prepaid cards. I'm not sure why, because the money's there, guaranteed. I don't understand why they wouldn't do that. But anyway, we've looked at that quite a bit. Matter of getting away from the banks and you know, keeping one account open just for those people that won't take. You know, there's services that we get with our bank because I'm a veteran and everything, and we get you know, a lot of free service, you know, free money orders and notarizing and stuff like that. So it's worth hanging on to to one bank account just for that reason. But other than that, it's nice to have the peace of mind of having. And if you keep some of that cash around, you know, you can keep getting, even if you just get one single silver quarter, every once in a while, every paycheck, just go down and get something and start hoarding it away. You may not have a whole lot before the poop hits the fan, but if you have any, you're going to be better off than so many people out there. Because there are thousands upon thousands that have no idea, no clue of what is about to happen. Wouldn't believe you if you tried to tell them. And if you I don't know, I forgot what I was going to say there. I was trying to keep up with what's going on in the chat room here. Anyway, this, yeah, that's probably a good idea, Doc, practicing that stuff with an empty gun. You better believe it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm running out of steam here. We've still got a few minutes, but we may have to. Minnie, what is that? Use the 3D print of murder victim's finger. You know, that right there, I wrote a deal here on communication security here a while back. And I said that fingerprint is absolutely the most secure way to lock your phone up. Unless you had a very aggressive captor that would either get two or more people to get a hold of you and force you to touch it. Hell, I don't know, you might be able to just cut the finger off and do it. I mean, it would be possible. And there's another idea that I hadn't thought of, that police used a 3D print of a murder victim's finger to unlock the phone. In that particular instance, it's probably a good thing that they did the, I don't know why they just couldn't have used the murder victim, just used finger alone, and just take it down to the morgue and have unlocked the phone. Not sure exactly how that would work, but anyway, so obviously you have, two choices to lock the phone up, and that is either a good strong, most phones only allow numbers. So you've got to have a passcode made of numbers or a pattern of some kind. The numbers would be best if you're allowed to have more than four numbers. If you can have only four numbers only and no letters, no special characters, you haven't got any security there. So if you've got the possibility of putting in six or more numbers and along with special characters and stuff to unlock your phone, that's great. Otherwise, you're stuck with a pattern, and to just go and hit four dots with your pattern ain't going to be hitting on crap. You need to hit at least six. And don't just draw a box or make a letter out of it or something like that. You've got to mix it up a little bit and cross over your lines, put some diagonal lines in there, and that would be preferable to a four-number passcode. All right. Well, I think I'm going to get on out of here. We're pretty close to our regularly scheduled quitting time, and podcasts are all caught up, I think, except for one. Longslide, which password are you talking about? I know that when, I'm not even going to say that on the air, but I know that there was somebody that went down here not too awful long ago, and they could not get into some of the messages that they had on their phone because they couldn't get into the program. So that's a very good thing. Okay, well, I'm rambling and muttering now, so I'm going to get on out of here, and we'll see you guys Wednesday night. Remember, we're taking off tomorrow, so don't show up here in the chat room and say, well, Cope's late again. Well, I'm not going to be late. I'm not even going to be here. But Wednesday night, we will definitely be here. Second hour will be Gun Talk, and we're going to get Doc to join us for a little while, talk about a particular topic there. All right, see you guys Wednesday. Thanks for joining me. Hope you like our new schedule here. Been listening to The Shooting Bench. Tune in Monday through Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to midnight for the most politically incorrect show on talk radio. Don't pay attention to that guy in the time, because it's all going to be changed. I promise. Tune in again on Fridays at the same time for 2 hours of classic country music on Liberty Lounge.
Spend some time in San Francisco. And catch Living Way Out Here with me, Amy Reynolds, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, for the only good news out there. Trivia, stories, tips, hints, and fun on Living Way Out Here, right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Thank you.